I'm someone who is very competitive, and I'm someone who, if I'm doing something, I want to be good at it. Never really relied on makeup or clothes or, you know, like branded clothes, like high fashion brands to make me feel worthy.
Resting is productive. Mm-hmm. Like if we just go without a break, we burn out at some point. And you really taught me also to just do something or maybe do absolutely nothing and be okay with it.
Yeah, if I'm gonna read a book, oh, it has to be a self-development book. You cannot waste this time on reading a novel, you know? And it was like so many things that I'm reprogramming in my mind.
On today's episode, I have the honor to welcome one of the most beautiful people on planet Earth, my dear partner, Mariana Bekova. She is a model, she's an actress, she is the current Miss Grand Czech Republic, and she's a wonderful human being, and I am really blessed, grateful that you're here with me.
I'm gonna cry already. Stop it.
I've done so many episodes, so many interviews, but I never get as nervous as when I'm interviewing you.
I know. I have the same with you for some reason, but it's nice.
Yeah, it's a good practice.
It's good practice. Yeah.
Also, when you do the acting, it's so funny whenever you act, it's easier for you to do it in front of like strangers.
Literally, like it's literally easier for me to act in front of big producers and directors than it is to act in front of you. Like I was telling you literally yesterday, I was like, oh my God, if I have to do like my scene in front of you, I will probably pee myself. So yeah, it's good practice.
I'll do a podcast with you. You might do the next acting scene.
We'll talk about it.
So on today's episode, I would love to cover many things. I think for many women, especially young women out there, you are a role model. For me as well. Aww. I would maybe like to start talking about Miss Grand. You're currently Miss Grand Czech Republic. You spent months in Asia. Mm-hmm. I would love to know, first of all, why did you decide to join Miss Grand? And in general, this beauty world, pageant world?
That's a great question. And I think just to start also, you know, many people ask me often, what is it that you do? Because I do so many things. And I was recently just thinking about it, like, oh, I'm Miss Grand, like I'm Miss Czech Republic. And I do so many things, yet I feel like none of them actually define me, if that makes sense. And I know that for many people, I portray myself on social media and on Instagram as, you know, a miss, as a model, as someone who is in that sphere. But I'm so excited that we're also doing this podcast to show you and maybe uncover also other parts of me, because I feel like this world is very specific, and that's why many people were surprised that I was even wanting to join this world, because it was like actually against everything that I was preaching before. Not against it completely, but you know, just a completely different world. And so I think that's a perfect question to start with. I think growing up in the Czech Republic, Miss Czech Republic was a big deal. It was something that my grandma and I would watch every single year. Really, it would be something we would look forward to. Equally like the Oscars. It would be the two things that we watched every single year together. And she would always say, you know, once you turn 18, I'm gonna register you. And she kept saying it, and then she did. She registered me. And I felt like it was an amazing opportunity. You know, if you have a big dream to be in the entertainment industry, which I had, ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to act. For a girl like me, that was a great platform to start with. And what also I really liked about Miss competitions is that they have a huge emphasis on charity. And nowadays, it's very different than what it was even 10 years ago, even 20 years ago. And the competitions put a lot of emphasis on helping others. And it's not just about external beauty, it's also how you are inside. And that's why I literally was at Miss Grand for 1 month, because they were really watching us, really wanting to see what we're like, so they don't just pick the most beautiful girl, but also the one that is just the complete package. So something about it interested me ever since I was little, and I kind of followed that, and it was a great journey with my grandma, who followed everything about it. She came to the casting with me, she came to the semifinal with me, like literally everything. And it was definitely what I needed at the time, and it brought me to Miss Grand, and I got to go to Asia and compete and get fifth place for our small country, which is actually a big achievement, because a small country like the Czech Republic almost never places at competitions like these, just because we're so small and politically we don't have much to offer to them. So it was a big deal, and people were proud that I was representing Czech Republic well, and that made me really happy, and it helped me a lot also with my biggest dream, which was has always been acting. So that's like kind of the very quick version of my answer to your question.
I think you mentioned it before. If I know you personally, so
no, really,
yeah, surprise. If you would know Mariana personally, it would be like 90% of the time she doesn't wear makeup. I would even say 95% of the time.
Like 99%
of the time. 99% of the time. So tell me a bit about like how challenging was it for you to all of a sudden wear makeup every day and high heels every day. I don't remember ever, like in our personal life, in our private life, that you were ever... Where you would ever use high heels.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you own high heels. I've never seen them. But yeah,
That's true. It's funny that you say that, because yeah, those are values that I don't have at all. And I never really relied on makeup or clothes, or, you know, like branded clothes, like high fashion brands, to make me feel worthy. So I never relied on that. And also my mom, I was raised by my mom and my grandma, and they never, you know them, they're really not materialistic people at all. So that was honestly a really big challenge for me. And that was the most challenging for me, just to wear makeup every day, because not only is it expected of you, it is required. It was challenging for me, because I feel like I, you know, didn't prepare for it from my age of 5 like other girls, and so I was like really behind in a lot of things, and obviously my organization prepared me as well as they could, but it was just not the same as if you're preparing for 15 years before. So I worked a lot on my walk, because I was not good at walking on high heels, because I never walked on high heels. You know me, like I always walk barefoot in Bali. I just don't even wear shoes. And so I joined Miss Czech Republic right after we came from Bali, right? Like 3 months after. And I was used to just wearing a bikini and wearing flip-flops, salty hair, no makeup, you know, just chilling, just being like super comfortable with myself, like really just loving myself the way I was. And then I was put into this situation where I was kind of told like everything that it was wrong with me, and it was sort of a harsh reality check, where I was told what everything I should maybe change about myself, like what kind of plastic surgeries I should get, how much weight I should lose. And it really messed with me at the beginning, because I am someone who is very competitive, and I'm someone who, if I'm doing something, I want to be good at it.
Oh yeah, she always wants to. Just like me, just like me.
Yeah, because I think like if you're doing something, or that's also the thing, like that's what I was conditioned to believe. I was conditioned to believe that if you're doing something, you're either going to win or there's no point in doing it. And that is a horrible mentality to have, honestly, and that's something that I worked a lot on during therapy last summer when we went to a lot of retreats. And it's something that I'm still working on, because it has limited me so much, where it got to the point where I couldn't just do a hobby just to do a hobby. There was nothing that I did that was like pleasurable, like enjoyment, things that I would just do for pure pleasure, because everything had to be, okay, I'm gonna win at it. And it got to a point where even like going for a walk, okay, let me fucking stopwatch, you know, how many steps I'm getting. Like it wasn't even like, oh, let me have a relaxing walk in the nature. Or if I'm gonna read a book, oh, it has to be a self-development book. You cannot waste this time on reading a novel, you know? And it was like so many things that I'm reprogramming in my mind now. So I'm specifically just reading novels, for example, because that's something I never allowed myself to do. And it's something that I have found so much passion in. And you know it, in the past year, I have read probably like 60 novels and I love it. And it just brings me so much pleasure. And it's not productive at all. But, well, productive in the sense
I would say it's productive. That's also something you taught me, that not everything has to be about self-development, not everything has to be quote-unquote productive, but that's maybe in society we just have to redefine what we call productive. Mm-hmm. Because, like, if you read a book about, what's a book you're... Yeah, reading like a novel.
Bridgerton.
If it just for fun purposes, it really like does your mental health something good. Definitely. You relax, you completely recharge. And I know you go into your reading book space
and
you zone out and you're so relaxed. And afterwards, you're so happy and you tell me about it. It's like part of mental health. It's part of productivity. Mm-hmm. Resting is productive. Mm-hmm. Like if we just go without a break, we burn out at some point. And you really taught me also to just do something or maybe do absolutely nothing and be okay with it.
Yeah.
I think...
that's so funny because I'm the type of person who really like loves to relax. Like I think many people... It's so funny because many people actually, when they meet me for the first time, they're like... Wow, you do so many things. Like, do you ever rest? Like, do you ever like have time? You know, you must be go from the morning to the evening. And it was so funny because this lady told me that at an event, like when we were sitting apart maybe 3 weeks ago. And it was so funny to me because that day I literally like was in bed until like 12:30 and just reading, you know? And I was like, yeah, so productive. And I feel like I really, I don't want to say taught you that, but showed you that. And I feel like that you learned that so much in the 3 years we've been together, to really relax and really take days off, because you have always been like really really productive a lot of the time. How would I say that?
It's also quite funny because people think the complete opposite of me. They're like, are you ever working? Or like, are you always chilling? You know, when they see me traveling a lot or something. And I think for me, it's quite the opposite. It would be like, I am really driven. I think you are driven too. Mm-hmm. But especially when we met, it was such a early stage of my career that I was so determined and so obsessed with getting things done and getting closer to my goal, almost to, I think to an unhealthy level. Mm-hmm.
And it's so tricky too, because like, it's so tricky to define what's unhealthy, because you love it and you like, it's inspired action and you're just like, go, and you feel so fulfilled. But if it's taking up like all of your time and you're not seeing any friends and you're not being social, then is that unhealthy? It's such a tricky line to draw, because let's say like with substances, I feel like it's easier, you know, to say like, okay, I have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. But like with work, like if I love it, you know, I know this is a minor, but I think it's interesting also, like how did you, you know, like figure out that that's something you maybe want to change?
I think it gets problematic when you can't just relax. If you are at the beach and you think about work. Mm-hmm. And looking back, that was the case. Even I judged myself for doing nothing. I judged myself for laying at the beach and just like I couldn't just lay on the beach. Mm-hmm. When I was at the beach, I thought about work. Mm. And when I was just, I just could not waste time. And that's when, or like how I would define problematic, when you can't relax. Mm-hmm. And I think many high achievers struggle with that. Mm-hmm. And also business owner, because there's always something you can do. Like always. It's not like you are employed and you go to work at 9 and you finish at 5. Mm-hmm. There is always something. There is always this one piece of content that you could produce. Always something. And it's so challenging when work and play are so close to each other. Mm-hmm. I found for myself that I, through also you and working on myself, retreats, therapy, that it helps me so much to take days off or also go on a holiday without my phone, without creating a vlog, without making a video. And at the end of a holiday, I'm always so full of new ideas. I can reflect, I can stop. And I think that's part of productivity, to rest. It's like a football player. Imagine they would start running from minute one and just start sprinting 20 minutes without taking a rest. They would be done after 20 minutes. So I think it's really important to have those times, read Bridgerton, or also just do something that has nothing to do with self-development or working on your craft.
I agree so much, and like I mentioned before, it was something that has been really difficult for me at the beginning to break through and to even understand, because I remember being at, that was literally last year, like that's a transformation I made in the past few months. In the summer, we went to a retreat, to a self-developmental retreat together, and I remember there were some journaling questions, and I was really just telling the therapist, like, if I'm doing something and I'm not thinking of winning, what's the point? And she was like, sometimes there is no point. There is just, you just enjoy the moment. Or she said something like that. And I was like, no, I don't understand this. I don't take this at all. That's like wasted time. And I was really like, what are you saying here? Like, it just like didn't click. And then I was examining, like, where is this coming from? And it was really strong conditioning, because my father was an athlete. He was like Olympic level athlete. He was going to go to the Olympics. And he raised us with that sort of mentality, or at least me, because I did rhythmic gymnastics since I was 4. And it was always like, okay, you're going to be really good at this. And my worth was really depending on the fact that I was very athletic. And then I was smart at school. And it was always just me being the best at something. And that was determining my worth. And it even got a point of him saying, you know, second is the first to lose. If you're second, you're the first loser on stage. So rather be first or don't try at all. Mm-hmm. And that was the mentality I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And that is hard to break through, because that's so much pressure. And that's so much pressure to the point of it's absolutely demotivating to try anything new. Because if you're going to fail at something, it feels like dying. Like, because when something happens in your primal years until 7 or 8 years old, that's called the primal years. You are not a logical human being to be like, okay, yeah, I shouldn't have gone to sleep so late last night, and then I would have performed better today. No, like what they tell you, you think that's you. Like if they say, you suck, you're lazy, maybe, I don't know, I didn't perform well enough in rhythmic gymnastics and I got third place, and they say, wow, that really sucked, like you were horrible. I thought I was really horrible. And if you feel that rejection from the parent, it feels like death, because for a child in their primal years, if you're rejected by a parent, you're gonna die. Or at least that's what's programmed within us for the past thousands of years. If thousands of years ago, your parent, until the age of about 8, would reject you, you would die. There was absolutely no way you could take care of yourself. Well, some 6-year-olds are maybe better, you know, but like average, you would not be able to take care of yourself. So it's really programmed within us that rejection feels like death. And as a child, you'll do anything not to feel rejected by the parent. You'll do anything to make them love you. So that was so deep within me that I found that in my adult years, I didn't try new hobbies. I didn't try things because I was so scared of failing. And that was the biggest missing piece in my acting career, because now I'm starting my acting career. All my life I wanted to be an actor, but now I'm really just starting, you know, like really taking classes, like acting for film and like really going deep into it. And I found that this fear of failing was holding me back so much, because I wasn't able to relax. All I was doing was trying to get it right for the acting coach to tell me I was doing a good job. Mm-hmm. But it was that kind of motivation rather than just relaxing in the scene and just, you know, like portraying the character and being that character and feeling it. It was really just, I was scared to let go because I was scared that I will fail. And it got to a point where I was just like, I'm not going to do this anymore, because I'm not being the best at it right now, or in the class I'm not the best, and that means I'm horrible and I shouldn't even try. And then you showed me some podcasts. I don't remember who the podcast was with, but they were saying, like, I do something that I fail at every day, or Who was that? The Spanx yeah, woman.
Sarah. I don't want to mispronounce her name, but I think her first name is Sarah and the second name is Blakely.
Yeah, I think so. But she said something like, I encourage my kids to do something they fail at every day, or they ask them, what do they fail at today? And I was like, you asked them what they failed at? That's horrible, because I had that condition within me. But then I was like, no, that's great. And I've definitely been implying that at all. A lot. Wait, I just realized I never actually answered your question about Ms. Grant. Maybe we should go back to it, because then I kind of diverted a little bit.
I think it's really important. I, at least in my world, during my childhood at school, it was always, you would almost get punished for making a mistake.
Yeah.
Like literally, like your friends would laugh about you if you would say something wrong.
Mm-hmm. No, but even the teachers, like, let's just look at how the average schooling system is made. Like, you are literally getting a mark for like a specific way of doing things, and if you just do them differently or if you try to be creative with it, no, you get an F. So you adapt to what they're asking for you, but you kind of diminish yourself in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's conditioned within all of us.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Within all of us, we fear failure. We connect a lot of pain with failing.
Mm-hmm.
And you shared your thoughts about like how it impacts you in the acting world, in the business world. It's the same thing. You cannot, it's impossible to grow a business, scale it without failing. You have to try new things. If you don't try new things, you're probably not innovative, and whenever you try new things, you're gonna make mistakes. Mm-hmm. You're gonna fail. There is this beautiful quote. It says, failure is not the opposite of success, it's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, it's so funny, you said your father wasn't athlete. My father was an athlete too, on a really professional level, cyclist. And I had the same thing. Like, I thought I always have to do it perfect. I mm-hmm. always have to win. I would get so competitive, even if we just play a game, you know, like, what is the one game that we always play?
Monopoly?
Yeah. Like, I always had to win. So I'm so grateful that you went there and mm-hmm. that we can have this conversation about failing, about mm-hmm. learning and actually accepting it mm-hmm. as part of growth and thinking like, hey, it's actually a good point. And
you know, back to my acting career and failing, when I started going to the classes, I have an amazing acting teacher. He is so sweet, and I work with him so much, even privately, that we created like this beautiful relationship together. He's like an uncle to me or something, and he really looks out for me. And he was telling me at the beginning, I was doing some scene, and he stops me in front of the whole class. He's like, Mariana, I am not wanting to see people pleaser Mariana anymore. Today is the last class that you're doing this. From next class, I want to see the real vulnerable Mariana. Here we don't need perfect Mariana. We need the opposite. We need the real Mariana. And it was such a transformational moment for me, because he saw right through me. And this week I did the scene in class, and it was the first time that I really felt that I just didn't care at all what anyone thinks of me. And I was just like, what am I waiting for? You know, like, literally, and I feel like we even had the conversation a day later, like, literally we could be gone tomorrow. Like, we have no certainty of anything. And why am I holding back? Like, why? Like, what? Why? Because for the longest time, for example, I felt like I couldn't forgive my father, let's say, because I felt like if I forgave him, it would mean that what he did was okay, and I would kind of like lose my power in that sense. In the same way, I felt like if I stopped people pleasing, I would somehow lose my power. And I realized, like, no, like, I'm actually hurting myself in the process of doing that, because if I talk about the forgiving part, if I forgive someone, I don't forgive them for them, I forgive them for me. And when I really realized that, it helped me so much. And this week in class, I was really just like, I had like this epiphany almost of like, you know, I might not be here tomorrow, not that I'm planning on manifesting anything to happen, But just living more like that, like, oh, I'm not going to waste any more time. And I'm just going to go full send. And you know what? I surprised myself even. And then I had this really profound scene where even the acting coach was like, what is going on? Like, who is this new Mariana? You know? And I was like, yeah, I realized, you know what? I'm not going to hold back anymore. Just so you know. And he's like, okay. And it was almost like 20 kilos have been lifted off of me, because imagine a lifetime of people pleasing and then you just change that. It was definitely transformational for me, but it didn't come overnight. It's not like one day I woke up, you know. It was like a process with my therapist also, and years of working on this that led to this moment. And it's not like I don't care what people think of me at all anymore, but it's definitely better.
A couple of things that I also, from a man perspective, want to mention. This vulnerability, also as a man, is something such wonderful. I remember when we started our relationship, I already worked on it, but I have this background of, you need to be strong, you are not crying, you never show any weakness. And whenever a person, especially female person in past relationships, would show emotions, I would be like, what is wrong with you? You're not supposed to cry. You're not supposed to show emotions. Like, what are you crying for? It's not such a big deal. But then through work, I learned that it's one of the most beautiful things to just share how you truly feel without this mask that you're wearing. And we share a therapist, and I love her advice. The advice that she gave me was, Axel, when you feel hurt or you feel betrayed or any kind of those emotions, speak it out loud. And she always tells me, Axel, just say ouch out loud.
Yeah, we started doing that.
And
say out loud, ouch.
Ouch. And it really helps me to, you know, share how I truly feel, instead of the defense mechanisms that we developed as children that might have served us in the past.
What was your defense mechanism?
I like the cold, not just ice baths and cold showers, but I used to, and I think I still do it sometimes, have this isolation mechanism that I just distance myself. I would ignore people. There could be a romantic partner, but also friends in the past, you know, my caregivers. And I would just say everything is fine, but everyone around would know it's not fine. So that's what served me in the, like, as a child. I had to do it. Otherwise, I would have experienced even more physical abuse. Now, I don't have to be afraid anymore of physical abuse, but the defense mechanism was still there. It used to be days. Now, it's minutes or hours. But if something would have triggered me in the past, especially as a young adult, it could be days that I ignore that person. Not ignore, not see that person or run away, but just like...
It's because you were so hurt, and it was just a defense mechanism that you created when you were little. And it's something that we uncovered together last summer in the retreat, right?
I think even before the retreat, it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And I don't think that you ever come to the point where you everything is just perfect. You just get better at life, but you still have struggles. It's not that, you know, at some point you have nothing triggers
imagine
you, and you have reached enlightenment and you're 100% perfect. I just think you get better, and well, if you work, if you work on it, if you do therapy, if you reflect, best case you get better. And for me, looking back, you know, beginning of our relationship, it used to be hours or days. Now, sometimes I manage in a minute or two to shift my energy and say, you know what? I don't want, this is how I feel. No, it has nothing to do with you.
And it's so helpful also to for you to tell me like, ouch, that hurt me. And then I can be like, oh, really? Like, because maybe that wouldn't be something that would hurt me. But like, wow, okay, I'm sorry. You know, like, it's just helpful to say ouch. Because yeah. then it's like, you're not giving me the silent treatment because, you know, because you want to reconnect. It's not like anyone who gives a silent treatment is not like they want to be alone. They actually want to be connected.
Yeah.
So we just avoid that and it helps a lot. You know, talking about this reminds me super randomly of something I learned in school. I don't know if we mentioned this, but I'm still studying my master's degree, and it's something that was taught there. It's
in psychology, right?
In psychology, so yeah. Have you heard of Dr. Gottman? Dr. Gottman and his wife, I believe, created something called the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and they can predict with, I think, like 95% accuracy whether a couple will stay together or not in the first 2 or 3 minutes with them having an interview. It's crazy. Super interesting. Look into that. I'll show you later. But basically, they found that the four horsemen are criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. Criticism, and that's like things that you do when you go into conflict with someone, with your partner. And if you do any of those four, that's not good. So criticism is like you go into criticizing the partner, like, oh, you never do that. You're horrible at this. But we get criticism. Contempt is like, you're not even good at that. Like, oh, horrible. That's contempt. Three is defensiveness. Like, oh, I never do that. You always tell me I never do that. And four is stonewalling, where you just turn
guilty
away.
Guilty of the third one, by the way.
No, I feel like guilty. You are more guilty of the fourth one, the stonewalling. Or used to be stonewalling is where you just turn away and give the cold treatment. You just like, you're so below me, or that you don't even deserve my attention. Or like, you know, that kind of energy. And that reminded me so much because I feel like that's not so known, but it's so spot on, these four horsemen of the apocalypse, because I am guilty of... For example, well, I would say to some degree, sometimes all of them, but obviously we're not perfect. Yeah, I think like, wait, I just want to talk about this a little bit as well, because I feel like many people who watch us on social media think that our lives are just perfect and we're always positive and we always have just a harmonious lifestyle and we're just always just like dancing in a field of butterflies, and it's not like that. You know, we're all so human. We're not some superhumans that never fight, never have arguments, never have bad moments. And yeah, I also am guilty of, you know, criticizing you. Or for example, in arguments.
I think honestly, I'm going to look into it. But I think everyone is to a certain point, when, especially, you know, when a trigger comes up, it feels like in that moment, you know, it feels like it is so bad. You feel so... like you're reconnecting with the trauma that you experienced, that it feels so intense for the person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know if you can reach that like 100%. Like, I think everyone is guilty of it. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. I think what changes things is how you approach that after. And if whatever you bring awareness to already changes. And if, you know, if you're like, if you try not to be, let's say you're very critical of your partner and you say, you do this wrong, you do this wrong, you do this wrong, you always do this wrong, you never take out the trash. I love these words, always and never. We actually made a vow that we would not say those words when we're in arguments, right? Because they're just not true. Neither one of us does something always or never, you know, it's not true. So I think what's important is just bringing awareness to it and just being like, oh my God, I criticized you, that wasn't fair. Or for example, I used to be a little more of the contempt, and I would just, my defense mechanism was like, you know, even if we break up, I'll be fine. Like sort of this feeling of I'm fine just alone, and I can forever be alone and I'll be fine. Even though that's not something I want, but it's just like a defense mechanism that I built when I was little, that even if I'm alone and even if I have to be that the one that takes care of everything, I'll be fine. Like, I'll make it work. I'll manage. And so when we would have an argument, sort of this contempt would be like, why am I even talking to you? Like, I don't care. You know, Even though, of course, I do care. It was just like, just something that like I did as a defense mechanism. But I think definitely through therapy and through sessions that we have had together, I've realized that, and I definitely stopped doing that. Or even sometimes maybe it might happen, but not regularly like it was anymore. And I think that's what the progress is, really looking at it and taking responsibility of how you act and what you say, and treating the other person with respect. And that's definitely something that you taught me, because in our family, you know, we kind of sometimes are very explosive.
I think in every family.
In every family?
Yeah.
And okay, so it was very explosive, and we never really thought of maybe taking time to respond to a trigger in a nice way. We just reacted. And that's sort of the point at which I met you, you know? And when, if I got triggered, it would be like, you know, like this sort of energy. Whereas you gave me a clear boundary from day one of, that is unacceptable and you will absolutely not talk like that. And sometimes I gotta say, it's a little bit more than I would maybe like. Like, you are very particular with words, like how we talk to each other. But I feel like it's much better like that than what I had starting with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think in general, what I think is helpful is that we become aware of how we speak and how we act and communicate clear boundaries. The reason why I say that is because I have a lot of trauma with yelling. I'm really, really sensitive, and I know that no conversation is productive when people yell. So I just learned or decided for me in my life, I don't accept people yelling at me under no circumstances. And I rather leave the conversation for 10 minutes and come back and it's calm, because I decided for myself, like, I will never have those horrible fights. People who actually love each other are yelling at each other and say things they don't mean, and then everybody gets hurt, and then 2 days later you have to come back together and, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean this and I didn't mean that. And I think you can avoid a lot of trouble if you just leave the room for 10 minutes, breathe, and then come back.
I agree. And it's such a beautiful conversation that we had, completely unrelated topic to Miss Grant. Isn't that funny? You asked me a question if it was challenging for me to prepare for Miss Grant. Should we revisit that?
No, definitely. Just before you go there, one thing that I want to mention, because we live in our bubble. Therapy is something I looked at as a teenager and as a child. And I think it's still in society considered a weakness.
Like, you must be... Yeah, therapy is like, oh, only the crazy people
go. Only the crazy therapist. People go.
Yeah.
Like, and only if something is extremely bad in your life, you do therapy. And that is... I think those statements usually come from people who have never tried it, including me. Like, I said those things. I looked at people when I was a teenager and young adult, like, you go... Like, he does therapy, like...
He's a cuckoo.
Yeah, exactly. And therapy made my life so much better. I am in a healthy relationship. I am somewhat successful. I love my job.
You're very successful.
Thank you. And I still do therapy. And I think more people, you know, should be at least open and try if they can. You know, not everyone is so privileged to be able to, you know, pay for therapy and do it. But in general, I think the misconception is that showing weakness or like showing emotions is a weakness. And we just see, you know, depression rates go up, suicide rates go up, and so many people, you know, struggle mentally, but they never talk about it.
I don't know where I would be if I didn't do therapy. I think I would be really in a bad place, because when I started therapy, I really hated myself. I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror. And you know what's funny? Is that this was a time when I was a model. And I was traveling to Asia. I was traveling to Europe. I was traveling to all these places as a model. as someone who is in catalogs and on billboards and in commercials, and as someone who other people look up to maybe and say, wow, you know, she must be really comfortable in her body, like she's a model, like I wish I was like that. And that was a time when I hated myself. And one of the first sessions in therapy I had was the therapist asked me, what do you like about yourself? Like, you know, as part of her questionnaire. And I couldn't tell her a single thing, genuinely. And it wasn't like a sort of thing of like, oh, I'm not telling you something because I want attention. I want you to tell me how beautiful I am. No, it was genuinely, I had nothing. Like, I was like, no, I'm horrible. And I just, honestly, many days wondered if like this world really needs me. Like, it got to a place where like, I wasn't even sure if I want to be here. And I'm so grateful to her because we worked every week together. Every Friday we would have our session. And so next week she asked me again and I was like, okay, I thought about it and I like my fingernails. And it's such a funny thing to say, but it was like the only thing I could kind of pinpoint about my body that I could say I like. And so I would be like, okay, I like my fingernails. And she was like, great, let's work with that. So for the next week, every chance you get, every time you remember, you're going to admire your fingernails. You're going to just be like, wow, I have nice fingernails. They're, I don't know, such a nice oval shape, such a nice color, whatever. And then I was like, okay, cool. And then I don't know if a week or 2 weeks passed and she asked me again, like, is there something more you like about yourself or do you want to stick to the fingernails? And I was like, you know what? I realized I actually like my fingers. Like, I like my hands. I feel like they're long and, I don't know, pretty. And she was like, great, let's work with that. So we worked with that. And then eventually I told her, you know what? Actually, I like my arms. I like my shoulders. I like my collarbones. And things started adding up. And the more I focused on self-love and the more I focused on loving myself, the easier it got to add things to the list. But I think it's important to say that is because I was a successful model and I was traveling to all these places and you would think that I was so confident, but I was really not. And that was the time when I had the most anxieties ever. And all of my model friends I had at the time were some of the most anxious people ever and some of the lowest confidence people ever. And I think it was such a sad thing to see. And I think it's important to talk about because I have a lot of young following looking up to me, especially on social media. And I want to be as transparent as possible because I feel like it's my responsibility, you know, to share also the bad moments. So I'm very open about that. About how I started and how not every day is amazing for me either, because I feel like it's so easy, especially with social media, to see someone and think that they have it all figured out, you know, and see someone and not realize that they're just showing us their best moments. They're not showing us the time where they were just crying about something and really feeling depressed. And, you know, there was a time when, for example, I was crying hysterically, literally being so depressed, and then I would go and shoot like it was like a beach catalog, and I was like laughing with the girls, you know, having a drink in my hand, like everything is great. An hour before that I was having a mental breakdown and nobody would know, you know, because I never talked about that. And I feel like that is the pattern with so many people, especially in this business, but it's just not talked about enough. And I just wanted to say it because I think it brings things into perspective a lot, because people text me like, what's wrong with me? You know, I'm not as happy as you. You seem so happy every day. How do you do it? Why am I not so happy like you? And I text back saying, I'm not happy every day. You know, like, you know, sometimes it takes extra effort to be happy, but I put in that effort for myself and I already know things that make me feel better. And maybe if I don't feel good, I need to schedule an extra therapy session and I need to work on that. And it's not like I'm some superhuman that's just always positive. But what I want to say is there's nothing wrong with you. You know, like you're not broken. You're not, you know, you are not no less than me just because I show my best moments on social media.
I think genuinely everyone shows their best moments on social media. I think that's just naturally being human, you know, you want to document. Also, when you think of, you know, when I was a child, we would always take pictures, those little You know what kind of picture, cameras. I mean? You know, you don't take pictures when you have an argument or when you cry. What? Well, my family actually did that. We have pictures of me or my siblings just crying hysterically about something. But yeah, you usually document the moments where you experience joy. And if you compare your life, your kind of you have behind the scenes knowledge about your life, and then you see the highlight reel of another person, you're like, oh, you know, they must have figured it all out. So I'm really grateful that you opened that up. And I think you do a good job on social media also mentioning like, hey, I feel like horrible right now. And this is really challenging to me. I remember the time at Miss Grant, you slept 3-4 hours every day, which was also like, for me as someone who cares so much about you, like, okay, because my natural is, I want to help. Like, I want that you feel amazing and I want to take care of you. And when you told me like, hey, we film until 1 and then we wake up at 5 or 6, I'm like, when do you sleep? How do you do it?
Yeah, and you know what? Let's say we ended our rehearsal at 1 a.m. Then we got to the room maybe at 1:30, but then you have to wash your hair, prepare your things for the next day. So then it's maybe like 3, and then you have to wake up at 5. And so you have 2 hours of sleep, but you drink something bad, you eat something bad, you have a stomach bug. So I went to the toilet maybe like 30 times in the 2 hours that I slept. So basically you get 5 minutes maybe of sleep. And then you have to function all day. On no caffeine for me because I don't drink coffee and I'm allergic to green tea. So I was majorly...
The question that probably everyone asks themselves right now, including me, why on earth would you do that? With the back, but I also know, you know, I sometimes compare those worlds, like, let me explain. The beauty world, pageants, and bodybuilding have a lot of similarities. You know, bodybuilder, they starve themselves to a point where they have 5 to 10% body fat, whether there's a difference between men and women. But it's so hard. And at the end, you barely sleep. You can barely sleep. You wake up, you want food. All you think about is food. And from the outside, people look so good, like so big, so strong. But inside, you feel horrible.
Sounds awful.
You and again, you sacrifice your health for this thing. I know.
For me, the question would be, why would anyone do that? It's so funny that you asked me that. But no, I definitely can relate. I mean, not with the food, because I would never restrict myself in terms of food. I mean, I went through an eating disorder when I was 15, and then I recovered, and now I'm in a place where, you know, I love myself and I love my body. And so I can't relate to the food part. However, I can relate to the no sleep part and to the part that it's absolutely, you know, exhausting. But there's just something pushing you forward. And I honestly, I enjoyed my time there a lot. You know, it got me so much closer to the world that I always wanted to be a part of, which was always acting. And in a way, being a miss is an acting role. The biggest actress wins the prize, you know, because you kind of have to, everyone portrays themselves in like their ideal self. You're not really yourself in the competition. You're your ideal self. It's not like I changed myself. It's not like I was fake, but I was just like, you know, what would ideally Mariana be doing right now? She would be full of energy. She would be always happy, always optimistic. Even though many days I woke up after 2 hours of sleep and I felt horrible. And I would have to put on my headphones and go into the bathroom, put on Taylor Swift and just dance. And I would just jump up and down in our little bathroom there in the hotel room. And I would just jam because motion creates emotion. And I would get myself going, and then I would go to breakfast and I would chug ginger shots because that was instead of coffee for me. It would wake me up. It would keep my immunity high. So I was doing things. It's not like it came easy, you know, like I also had to work for it, but I didn't allow myself to be in victim mode. I didn't allow myself, you know, nobody cared. Like everybody was tired. Everybody was equally tired. Nobody cared that you're tired. If you're going to repeat it many times, people are going to be like, stop saying it. I'm also tired. What do you want me to do? if I couldn't complain to you because you were just angry at the whole situation that they don't let us sleep. So then I would just be making you more angry. So I couldn't complain to you. Couldn't complain to my mom because she would be like, okay, should I come get you or what should I do? You know? So ultimately it was really like a competition with myself and just being like, hey, I chose this. So either I'm going to just do it and try to enjoy it or I can go home. Like nobody was keeping me there. I could always go home, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was like really a battle in my own head. And, you know, that was just, it was worth it for me. Like I actually enjoyed it. And
What is the higher purpose?
The higher purpose? That's a great question. I mean, when I joined, obviously it was to inspire others. And I talked at the beginning about charity and that's why it was kind of interesting for me that it's not such a shallow world. And Ms. Graham specifically focuses a lot about stop the war and violence. So I was able to do like charity yoga for the refugees in Ukraine. And that was a way that I connected with this cause, which was beautiful. So definitely that had the higher purpose and also inspiring others to go for their dreams. And in a way that was my dream, you know, like all my life kind of was going towards this moment with my grandma and, you know, really every year watching these competitions and just being like, one day I will be there. So it was definitely a dream come true and showing everyone that even if circumstances are really against you, in which my case were that we're from a small country and everyone was just saying, there's no way you're going to even get into the top 10. Because if you look at the other girls from the top 10, it's countries like Brazil, Indonesia, Thailand, like they have millions of people in their population. Czech Republic has 10 million people. We are tiny. We're not even like a fraction of Indonesia has like 280 million or something. Like, you know, like there's just all odds were against me. And I just loved showing people that it doesn't matter. You can do it anyway and you can shine anyway. And that was my purpose in it, to just be like, hey, if I can do it, you can too. And if this is your dream, let me show you that it can be done. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was my kind of higher purpose in it. And just honestly taking it as life experience into my next chapter, which is acting. And I did so many live interviews in Thailand, in a country that I don't really understand the language, and learning the language kind of, and being able to talk on live national TV where millions of people are watching you. And it's not like you can make a mistake because they're going to cut it. They're not, it's live. And that we did almost every day. So that was amazing experience for me to just learn how to talk better, how to be more confident and grounded within myself. And just overall, I got to say it was the hardest experience of my life, but also the best experience of my life. And I wouldn't change anything. So it definitely served its higher purpose.
I think every sport, every competition, there is sacrifice. Like if you go to the Olympic Games, like you're going to sacrifice probably your health, your sleep, your food. It's funny that you said it. You would rather like sacrifice sleep. I would rather not eat for a month than not get my beauty sleep.
Oh, no. And I cannot sacrifice my food.
I can be days without food, but give me just one night of bad sleep and everyone
knows about it.
Everyone will know. Like, I can suck it up, but like sleep is just so important for...
Sure.
Sleep is just so important for your overall health. So is food, but yeah, everyone has preferences. And I also learned from like... just watching the competition and watching this whole beauty world that I've never experienced before, I learned not to judge. I learned that it is incredibly tough. You have to be able to do so many different things. You can't just, not just the prettiest wins, but you also, you need to talk, you need to like, and the questions that you were asked.
Oh my God, that was stressful.
They were insanely difficult.
So difficult, especially the question, you know, at the end in the top five, you get a question, which ended up being a political question. And, you know, there's so much pressure on you. And that day, I actually got quite sick. I think it was because I just didn't sleep the whole month and it was just quite stressful. And I remember the day of the final we had our rehearsal until 1 a.m. and then my national director said that we got to practice before the final so we would make the routine of how you walk, how you pose and stuff. We ended up practicing in the hallway until 3 a.m. and at this point I have a fever, a massive fever. I feel horrible. I'm like, I don't care about rehearsing. I just need to go to bed. And she's like, no, we need to rehearse. And I was like, eh. And so I wasn't feeling well at all. And then I ended up sleeping maybe an hour and a half. Then waking up, going to rehearsal all day, smiling, being like super upbeat. Nobody knew at all that I was like actually dying inside. I was so not feeling well. And so everything was so stressful that like I had a few bites here, a few bites here. I was tired. I was underfed all day. And then you're on stage. And then at the end, the last part was this question. And I remember standing backstage before we went on to hear the question. We didn't even know what the question was yet. And one of the girls in the top five just like faints. And she's just like out. And I'm like, what? And so we get the paramedic and I'm like, they're looking for candies, you know, to give her. And I'm like giving her candy. And she's like, are you okay? Are you okay? It's like, okay. And they're like, 2 minutes till the end of commercial break. And we're there like trying to revive her. Like, are you okay? Like, it was that challenging for the body. Like, we were all exhausted. And she was like, she ended up being okay. She stood up and then we went out and then you hear the question. But just imagine the state I was in, right? Like there was no time because usually the commercial break, let's say it's like 5 minutes and you can kind of relax. You can kind of take a few breaths, you know, there are no cameras on you. You can chill out for a little bit, but this was like so stressful that none of us relaxed. And then we went on stage and then we heard this question. So I was still trying to like calm myself down from what happened in backstage. And then I hear this question, which is super political. You guys can go watch it. It's on YouTube. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna say so I don't like offend people? And it was not the easiest thing, but I just spoke from my heart and I think I answered it well. But yeah, it's like you said, it's so many things that go into it that normal people would not even see. And still there's such a misconception of beauty pageants just being about like, oh, girls walking around on stage and you judging who's the prettiest. No, like it's just work and work goes into it. And it was definitely a very interesting experience. We were just talking about it together. Like if I got the opportunity to go to another competition, would I? Because we were talking that there's this big competition maybe that my organization would like to send me to. And I think I would do it again. Like there was just something in your face.
Mark.
I think there's something, I just enjoyed it. It was hard, but I enjoyed it. And I'm happy that you were there with me. I'm happy, really grateful that you supported me because it was not easy, obviously, for us to be apart for so long because it was not just the month of the competition. It was also me winning the working contract in Bangkok after all the way until December. So it was a long time, but looking back now, I think it's so worth it because it has jump-started my acting career as well, just because of all the contacts I have now, and yeah, overall worth it.
I think in general, it is one of the most challenging things to support. Like, I always said it and I will always say it, like, it's a world I wouldn't get in, you know, like, when your partner does something that you, I don't necessarily understand it, mm-hmm. but I can try to understand it. Like, there was a part of my life where I did, for example, bodybuilding and I did a bodybuilding competition, you know, and I did similar things. Like I starved myself. I ate like 1600 calories and trained twice a day.
And that's like less than I eat.
Yeah, yeah. Like you sacrifice your health, your health and your hormones and everything to just look good for this one day. But somehow there is this higher purpose for some people, you know, and who am I to judge you and what you want to do? I try my best to support whatever you want to do, even if I don't resonate with this competition or any, you know, anything of that. And I think that's also like, I'm grateful that you did it because it made me grow as a person as well. Mm. Even if I don't understand it, I know it's important to you. Mm-hmm. And you might not understand things that I want to do. Like who even knows what I'm... Mm-hmm. gonna decide to do,
like go karting every weekend.
But then that, there is no sacrifice in that. Go kart. No, but imagine your partner like does something like Formula One or, you know, any athletes. Mm-hmm. There is a sacrifice.
I was just thinking about that. Like, literally in anything you want, you will have to sacrifice something. And for example, now us being in the US, which has been a dream for both of us, right? To see it here, to be here for a little bit. And for me, particularly Los Angeles, because I always wanted to act. And it has been such a dream come true, and it has been so amazing. But I really miss my family, and we are so far away from mm-hmm. them. We are 9 hours behind them. They're 9 hours ahead. So when we wake up, they're basically going to sleep. So there's not really much time for us to talk. There's not much time to like FaceTime. And that has been a huge sacrifice for me, for example. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking like, wow, I really want this. And I'm proud of myself for going for it, even though that part is so challenging for me. You know, so in everything, you kind of have to sacrifice something, but you just have to see like, is it worth it for me? Like, it doesn't make sense. And if it does, then align yourself with it and just go for it. Like, don't half do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just go. I mean, I could talk to you for hours and hours. This podcast is probably like an hour and a half already. Hour, 15 minutes.
I could go on forever. I think you mentioned so many important things which will be valuable for, I think, female and males watching, especially the part where you just, you know, shared about you being vulnerable. I see that sometimes also when I meet people, like, oh, Mariana, she's always so confident and everything, you know, and I know that people have the same perception about me. So I'm really grateful that we can have this conversation and maybe inspire people to get a therapist, to share your true emotions with your partner or anyone. Like, there is someone who cares about you.
Mm-hmm.
And
therapy is great.
No, we have,
we're big advocates for therapy.
We really have to make therapy like cool again. Yeah. It's so such a nice thing to have a therapist or mm-hmm. do any kind of work in that direction.
I'm so lucky because literally every single person in my family goes to therapy. So for me, it was never like I would get judged by my family members. Maybe from like my dad's side of the family, they're not really for it, and they judged us. They think we're the cuckoo part of the family, but I don't care, you know. But I got lucky because many people around me are doing therapy. So I understand that it might be very scary if you're the first person out of all your friends, out of all your family to go to therapy, and everyone's kind of like, what's wrong with you? But you can always text us and we'll tell you, no, you're doing great. or come to one of our events and find people who are also doing therapy, who are doing similar things like you. For me, that's super helpful to see that I'm not alone in this, you know?
Definitely. Talking about events, we have a retreat coming up. Mm-hmm. We have two this summer. I'm really excited. Just, yeah, retreats are such a nice mm-hmm. place for transformations. We have one in May.
Which is sold out already, unfortunately, if you're watching this.
But the depends when you watch it. We have one in June in beautiful Spain. You mm-hmm. can still apply. It's 6 days. The theme is life energy. Awaken your life energy. We will be going through a lot.
Mm.
It's going to be deep, but it's going to be worth your time. You will find a link down below where you can just apply. And we might see you in beautiful Spain. And Mari, thank you for joining. Thank you for the sacrifice. Thank you for inspiring so many people and, yeah, being vulnerable.
Thank you so much for having me. And I think this is not the last time we're doing a podcast together, because I feel like we talked about so much, but we barely even touched what all of the topics are that we could talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's what I love about our relationships, that we can just sit and have these deep conversations and just go really deep. And now putting these two cameras here and just broadcasting it to the world is special in itself. And it was a little bit nerve-wracking at the beginning, but I'm very happy that we did it. And so you guys see a little bit of a different side of me, maybe. And yeah, it was fun.
Thank you so much for watching, for listening. If this episode brought you value, let us know. Share it with your friends, your family, people you want to inspire. Tag us so we can say thank you. And that's it for today.
Thank you.